Thanks, Kalder. This is a joint work with my colleague Peter Mochko and my advisor Margot Seltzer. Data are moving to the cloud, but unfortunately, we at this point really have very little sense for where the data came from. So this talk presents a few approaches for trying to change that. Okay. So we all know that the cloud is becoming increasingly important. There are a couple of companies that provide solutions that back up your desktop data onto the cloud. Amazon has this public data sets program that allow scientists to share their data for free on their cloud services. There are companies that store their web application data and serve their web pages from the cloud. But however, the existing cloud services are really not designed to store provenance. Okay. So what is provenance? Provenance is metadata that describes the history of an object. It includes information such as what other objects does this object depend on, what applications modified or generated this object. So to give you an example, suppose you have some climate prediction data that's stored on the cloud. A bunch of working groups have collected their data and stored their individual data sets up there. And then you run an aggregation process that reads these working group data sets 1 through N and produce a final report and store it on the cloud. Okay. So in this scenario, the provenance of the aggregate process P is the working group data sets that it read, 1 through N that it read. Okay. And the provenance of the report is the process, the aggregation process that generated it. Okay. So the report depends on the aggregation process, and in turn it depends on the data sets that were read in the first place. Okay. So in general, provenance forms a DAG, and the nodes in the DAG represent processes and files or other application objects that that resulted in the final output. And so basically what we're doing with provenance is we're recording the history of things as they happen. Okay. So why is this cloud provenance so important? So if you go back to the example that I just gave you, right? So it turned out that one of the working groups had based their results on social data. That is, there were some activists who told them some information, and then they made the claim that the Himalayan glaciers are going to melt soon. Okay. So, but luckily, they had the provenance for this data set. And so the people who were going to base their decisions on it were able to look at this data set and, they could make a value decision based on that. Look at the provenance and make a valid decision based on that. So one of the crucial use cases for provenance is you can validate the data sets that you get on the cloud. And since, the next thing is since it's keeping track of how each data set was used, so you can trace the data set's history all the way to the raw data generation, so you can tell how a data might have spread through the system. And another use case is you can use provenance to improve the quality of search. Okay, so there are not many cloud services that actually provide search at this point, but some of them are beginning to think about it. Okay, so when they do, this is valuable. So there was a group from Michigan and Carnegie Mellon that got together and showed that they could use provenance to improve the quality of search. Okay, and the last use case, this is ongoing work by people from Santa Cruz and NetApp. So what they've done is, if you have some data that you access very rarely, right, instead of storing it, you might as well generate it on demand. But for that, you need the provenance. You need to know what were the inputs used and what was the process through which it went. Okay? So hopefully I've convinced you that provenance is vital. And the goal of this talk is to explore how can we store provenance given today's cloud offerings and, what are the costs for doing so. The rest of this is the outline for my talk. So next I'll be talking about the design issues. So let me quickly tell you about the setting for this work. We built a provenance-aware storage system, which is basically a system that observes system calls and then infers provenance. Okay. So it observes read and write calls and then builds dependency graphs based on that. So we initially designed it for a local file system and then we extended it for NFS. And in this work, we basically extended it so that we can store the provenance on Amazon Web Services. In theory, it should easily work for Microsoft Azure also, but we haven't tried that yet. So I've told you the setting of our work. I'll tell you, and then we identified some properties that we think are crucial that increase the value of the provenance that you collect. Okay. So we identified four properties. I'll go over all of them in detail. So the first one says is about provenance data coupling. What this says is that the provenance should accurately describe the data object. Okay. So for example, if you go back to the example, if the provenance says the report was derived from version 2 of the aggregation process, it had better be the case, right? If it turned out that the report was stale and it was actually derived by version 1 of the process, then, you know, users will be misled because of that. And at the very least, if you can't really ensure provenance data coupling, maybe detection will be useful. Okay. So data coupling properties spoke about an object and its provenance. What multi-object causal auditing does is it extends the property in a similar manner all the way through the provenance chain. Okay. So, suppose working group one's result was actually derived from data sets that a couple of activists gave them. They ran it through some quality control process and then aggregated it. And in turn, our aggregator process generated the report. And so now, we have provenance saying, well, the report report was generated by this aggregator process, but we don't have the provenance for this process. So, basically we have a dangling pointer in our provenance DAG, and then it reduces the value of the provenance. Okay. The next property is data independent persistent. It basically states that, you cannot always delete the provenance when an object is deleted. Okay. So going back to our example, you might say, well, I have the final report, so I'm going to delete the working group. Intermediate data sets because I don't need them anymore. And so you could maybe delete the intermediate reports, but if you delete the provenance, what this will do is it'll disconnect the DAG again, and so you'll lose the connection between. Well, you'll lose the fact that. The report was actually derived from something that some activists came up with. Okay. And finally, it's great to have record the provenance, but you also need to be able to access it efficiently, right? You might want to look up objects based on some property. If you can't do that, you're forced to look through all the provenance in the system, and when people are forced to do something through brute force, they generally don't do it. So I've told you about the setting of our problem, and I've told you about the properties that we think that we identified that are important. Now I'll tell you about some of the design decisions in this work. So the first design decision was we didn't build a system; instead, we designed three protocols for solving this problem. And so the reason for this is you could say, okay, so you want to build a system that satisfies these properties. You have some existing cloud systems out there. So why don't you build a front-end service that'll solve the problem for you, that'll give you the APIs that you want? But the problem with that is, the availability of your cloud store is reduced to the availability of your front-end service. On top of that, the very reason for moving to the cloud is so that you can outsource your IT to someone else, right? But if you start building your own services, front-end services, then you're kind of missing the point. And then the second point is, well, to satisfy efficient query, a lot of people, most provenance systems end up eventually storing their provenance in a database such as MySQL or Berkeley DB. But here, in the context of the cloud, the number of concurrent accessors or the number of people who are concurrently generating provenance can be in the order of thousands or more than that. So in that case, you really cannot use these solutions that are designed to run on a single node. You really need to use a cloud database. And this introduces some problems that I will discuss later on. Okay. And finally, when we did work on PaaS or provenance-aware NFS, we were able to change the file system or the NFS protocol because we could control the source code of the server and the client. Whereas here, Amazon or Azure gives us a service and we have to play with whatever we get. And so because of this, basically the things are not extensible here, and in turn, it forces us to provide a weaker form of guarantees. I'll discuss that also later on. Okay. So I've told you, the setting. I've told you the properties that we're trying to satisfy. I've told you our design decisions. Now I'll present three protocols, and I'll present the simplest protocol first, and then the protocols become more and more sophisticated as we go, and as you might expect, they satisfy a different subset of the properties. Okay. So the first protocol is the simplest one. It just uses a cloud object store and nothing else. It stores the provenance in a separate object and the data in a separate object. Examples of cloud stores are Amazon S3 and Azure Blob. In these services, objects are identified by an URI. They provide a SOAP or a REST interface, and they support operations such as put, get, copy, delete. Users are charged based on the amount of data they store, the bandwidth they consume, and the number of operations that they perform. And there's also some difference in the consistency semantics they provide. Most Amazon services are generally eventually consistent, and Microsoft services are actually strictly consistent. Okay. So this is how the overall schema looks like. There's the client, there's the application running on a client node, and it's talking to PaaS. And PaaS is collecting provenance by observing system calls. And then when on an appropriate event, such as a file close or a sync or any other event, PaaS sends the provenance and the data to the cloud store. Okay. Now what properties does this protocol satisfy? It doesn't satisfy data coupling for the simple reason that you might have sent the provenance and then you crash before you send the data object. Okay. You can satisfy causal ordering, but to do this, you really need to carefully order your updates to the cloud. So you always have to ensure that you send an ancestor object before you send a descendant object. Okay. And it actually does satisfy data independent persistent because after all, you're storing the provenance in a separate object. If you delete the object, you still have its provenance. And finally, it doesn't satisfy efficient query because you're storing the provenance in a file, and so there's no way for you to run an efficient query or do efficient lookups. So the next protocol is an improvement over this. It uses a cloud store and a cloud database. It stores the data in a cloud blob store and the provenance in a cloud store. Examples of cloud stores are Amazon SimpleDB and Azure Table. Both of these have a semi-structured data model that is, in a normal database, each row has a fixed number of columns and each column has fixed kind of attributes, each column stores a fixed type of data, but here, each row can have different number of columns, and because of this, for each cell in the table, if you want to call it that, you have to specify both the attribute name and the value. And it supports operations such as to store attributes, get the attributes, delete them. And SimpleDB also lets you store the attributes in batch, that is, you can send up to 25 rows at once. And as you might expect, they do have some query interface. And there's a limit on the size of the value and data you can store. In SimpleDB, each name or value can be up to 1 KB. In Azure, it can be up to 64 KBs. And the cost is, again, similar to S3. The difference is that these databases also spend some resources on indexing the data as soon as you insert it, so for that they charge you for machine hours that you consume. Okay. The protocol is simple here. There's the client interacting with the PaaS. On the client, there's the application interacting with PaaS, and PaaS is collecting the provenance and data, and at appropriate events, it sends the provenance to the cloud database, sends the data to the cloud store. So what properties does this satisfy? We can put a check on efficient query here. That probably was a big improvement here. We still don't satisfy data coupling, because it could be that we have sent the provenance to SimpleDB and we crash before we send the data to S3. We can still satisfy causal ordering if we carefully order the order in which we send the objects. And we satisfy persistence here because we're storing the provenance in a separate service. So if you delete the primary object, we still have the provenance. So, and this is the last protocol. Its storage schema is similar to the second protocol, but it also uses a messaging service as a log and ensures data coupling between provenance and data. Okay. So examples of messaging services are Simple Queuing Service and Azure Queue. They're basically designed for clients, the distributed messaging systems that are designed for clients to interact among each other, but we kind of worked around it to use it as a log. Okay. And each queue is identified by URL, and it supports operations such as send message, receive message, delete message. Both Azure and Simple Queuing Service has a limit of 8 KB for the message size. Okay. So at a high level, this is how this protocol works. There's the application interacting with PaaS. PaaS is collecting provenance and data and caching it. And at the appropriate events, it sends both the provenance and data to a queue. And then there is a commit daemon that's looking at, that's assembling entries from the queue. It's reading entries from the queue and assembling it. Once it has assembled all the operations pertaining to one file or operation, once it has assembled all the provenance records and data pertaining to one file operation, then sends the provenance to the cloud DB and the data to the cloud store. So the difference here is that because you're using this queue to ensure durability, even if the client crashes, you can have the commit. The commit daemon can ensure that it only sends. It only stores the provenance and data for objects. It only stores the complete provenance and data, and you don't lose the coupling. Okay. So I'll go over this particular protocol in detail. You first send the objects to a temporary location. The reason for this is there's a limit of 8 KB on the message size, so you can't really send objects onto the messaging service. So you store the objects in a temporary location, and then send provenance and pointers to the objects to Simple Queuing Service. And there's a commit daemon that's pulling them out of this queue. And once it has all the records pertaining to an operation, it stores the provenance to Simple DB and then copies the file from the temporary location to its final location. And so here, the commit daemon only performs the put attributes and copy if it sees all the records pertaining to one operation. Otherwise, it ignores them. So you can ensure data coupling, okay? And this step just shows that the commit daemon then does garbage collection by deleting messages and deleting the temporary copies once you've moved a file from its temporary location to its final location. So sure enough, this protocol satisfies data coupling, but the maximum this protocol can do is it can only ensure eventual data coupling. The reason for this is in the case of Amazon, it only gives you eventual consistency, and that's the best you can do. In the case of Azure, you do have strict consistency, but there still are small windows when you just uploaded the provenance to the Simple DB, but you've not moved the data from its temporary location to its final location. So there's a small window where the data coupling property is violated. And since if you really want to ensure strict data coupling, then we need a transactional interface from these services, which we don't have at this point. So at this point, I've told you the protocols we've designed. Next, I'll show you an evaluation where we try to compare the three protocols that we designed. Okay. Our results are Amazon Web Services specific. And we evaluated the three protocols and compared it to S3FS. So think of S3FS as a protocol that just stores only the data to S3 and doesn't store any provenance anywhere. And we evaluated this with a bunch of micro benchmarks, with a bunch of workloads. I'll talk about them as I go along. Okay. So the first result I have to show you is this micro benchmark result. What we did here is the goal for this result, for this benchmark, was to figure out which protocol has the best raw throughput or something like that. And so for this, we ran a BLAST workload on PaaS. So BLAST is this workload that compares two genomic sequences and figures out what's common between them. And so we ran this on PaaS, collected the provenance, and then we just blasted the provenance and data using the protocols, blasted them to cloud stores. And here, for P3, we don't measure the time taken for commit daemon because once it's on the queue, it's there in the stable, it's durably stored, and the commit daemon is an asynchronous thing. And so, it turns out that our most robust protocol, which is P3, is the fastest. And the reason for this, it turned out that Simple Queuing Service is a very lightweight service. And, you're sending provenance in chunks of 8 KB, and that really gives you a speed up. P2, which stores provenance directly to Simple DB, is slower, and the reason it turned out was at the time of Randy's benchmark, SimpleDB was still in beta, and it still doesn't scale. It didn't scale so well. The maximum it could at best handle 40 concurrent connections from a single client, whereas S3 or simple queuing service could go up to 170 or 180 concurrent connections from a client. Okay, and so we also ran some application benchmarks. So here, apart from Blast, which we used in the previous workload, we also ran a nightly and challenged workload. The nightly benchmark, we basically tarred our own source repository and simulated a nightly archival for 30 days. And the challenged workload is basically an fMRI imaging workload. The difference between the workloads really is that Blast has, I mean, nightly has the smallest provenance tree, tree depth that's around 1 or 2. And Challenge has a tree depth of 11, and Blast has a tree depth of 5. And we ran the workloads on EC2 and a local, from EC2 and also from a local machine. On EC2, we can install custom kernel, so we had to run our kernel as UML. Okay. And so, you know, in general, it was pretty hard to see a pattern. P3 does pretty well in many of these benchmarks, but the overheads are so close that really, there's not much statistically different. The protocol performance is not statistically different, and all of them perform equally well or, you know, equally worse. and coming to the query results, you know, recall that protocol 1 stored provenance on S3, and it stored protocol 2 and 3 stored provenance on SimpleDB. I'm not going to show you any numbers. I think you'll believe me when I say that. When I ran query benchmarks, when I compared query benchmarks against, I mean, for two services, one of them was designed for querying, other was not. The one that was designed for querying was better. Okay. And then this table shows what's the cost in US dollars for storing provenance. You know, the overheads are on the order of a few cents. And as you expect, protocol 3 is the most expensive. And among P1 and P2, P2 was the most cheaper because it has a batch put operation, which reduces the number of operations you have to do, and in general, it saves you 1 cent. Okay. So one observation was that obtaining statistically significant results, especially when there's application time involved, is really hard. There are way too many uncontrollable factors. The WAN latencies kept changing. There's no way we could control the load on the services. And we also think the software version was changing because it seemed like the services, particularly SimpleDB, which was in beta, you know, the number of retries we had to do kept decreasing over time over the last 6 months as we were working on it. So at this point, I've presented the protocols and shown you an evaluation, and I'll conclude my talk here. So we've shown how to store provenance in today's cloud offerings, and our results show that, you know, in general, the most robust protocol is as good or better than the other protocols. And and so we basically considered this work as mostly of exploratory nature. It gave us a sense for what's the overheads for storing provenance in today's offerings, but it also gave us it also enabled us to find what are the research challenges in providing native support for provenance. So the first thing is, you know, we can only provide a limited set of we can only provide eventual data coupling or eventual causal ordering using today's services. And so if we were to re-architect it from scratch, we can provide stronger guarantees. And we assume we trust the client to give us the correct provenance. And so what do you need to do to ensure that the client cannot cheat on us and give us some false provenance? And finally, you know, if once the cloud provider provides native support for provenance, they can maybe take advantage of it in some way, for example, to place replicas or something like that. And so in that case, you know, you have these large provenance graphs. How do you process it efficiently to extract the information you want? And what are the data mining models you need to do that? And with that, I'll take any questions. Thanks.
Yeah, okay. Since no one else is asking, I'll ask you a question.
Sure.
So in addition to stronger consistency requirements, if you had to do it from scratch, What other insights do you have that you would re-architect if you are not constrained by the current Amazon infrastructure?
I mean, one of the things is that we, you know, so one of the things would probably be the API. Like, what are the, I mean, it's not so much of an architecture, but what's the API that you would provide to clients so that you can satisfy the properties however you want. So the problem here is to really get strong entities, you need a full transactional interface. But as people in Amazon keep telling, that's just never going to happen, or that just doesn't scale. So is there some intermediate point that we can figure out to actually get to that? That's one. The other thing I would say is, you need to satisfy, provenance systems in general need to satisfy both the requirements of a database and a storage system. Is there something you can do to do that efficiently? And finally, provenance is a DAG, and so SimpleDB and Azure Table are designed to store generic services, and provenance is a graph. So how would you design these databases so that they primarily serve graphs as opposed to any general data?
That's time to speak.